On to the sermon today. Since it was Youth Day, I'm going to be speaking to the youth, but also to all of us as human beings, all of us who have been, whether in the church for the 40, 50, 60 years, or whether we've been in the church only for a few years. But it has to do with the pathway to life and happiness. What is the pathway to life and true happiness? Since God is the creator of all, and he is the creator of human beings, would it even be logical that he would leave that human creation without instructions, insight, directions for that human being to be happy and to live the kind of a life that God knows, because he has lived for eternity, that God knows will bring about the good results that we want in our life? Life is full of choices. The purpose of this sermon is to help, especially the youth, to make proper choices before they wake up one morning like some of us did and realize our life is just about over, right? And to wish that, how many of us have wished that we had made different choices when we were a lot younger? Any of you ever wish you had made different choices in your life? And that we had recognized the need to go in certain directions and not to get caught up in a lot of falsehoods and a lot of things that did not bring about the what God says is success. We are told back in the book of Deuteronomy that there is a time of making choices. And I say that time to make certain choices is when we are young. Some of us didn't make the right choice when we were young, and therefore we wind up where we are today. Never too late. But still, God says in the book of Deuteronomy chapter 30, back in verse 15, where he says, I have set before you this day life and good, death and evil. So evil choices lead to death. Right choices, good choices, godly choices, he says, will lead to life. So I command you this day to love the Lord your God and to walk in his ways and to keep his commandments and his statutes and his judgments, that you may live and multiply, and the Lord your God will bless you in the land where you go to possess it. And so he's telling these Israelites, as they were planning and preparing to go into the promised land, that they needed to consider the evidence, consider the facts, consider all of the witnesses that have been brought forth. And it's kind of like a jury sitting there on the bench, listening to all the information that is presented by all the differing witnesses, and then a decision needs to be made based upon what they have said and what they do, right? As to what is the judgment that's going to be. Well, God tells us, based upon all of his witnesses and all of the facts that he has brought forth, that we need to be able to make the proper decision and judgment, and that is to walk according to his laws and his ways, and not to go the wrong way, because he says in verse 19 that I call heaven and earth to record this day against you. I mean, God has a lot of things to call as a witness and to record against us, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, he says, choose life, that you, both you and your seed may live. Back in the book of Joshua, just later, as they were entering into the promised land, actually after they had been there for some period of time, but in the book of Joshua, chapter 24, again, a statement is made in Joshua 24, And also in verse 15, I always found it fascinating how on certain important subjects, the verses always agree. Or sometimes the chapters agree. It makes it easy for memorization, right? And to know where certain things are. But in Joshua 24 and verse 15, he says, "And if it seem evil unto you to serve the Lord, choose you this day whom you will serve." So you are going to serve either one or the other. There's no middle road. There's no middle ground. Either you're going to serve God or you're not going to serve God. "So choose you this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house," Joshua would say, "we have already made the decision. We've made the commitment. We've already made that determination that we will serve the Lord." And then all the people answered and said, "God forbid that we should forsake the Lord to serve other gods." Didn't last very long, by the way, did it? If you go right on to the book of Judges, you'll see how long it lasted that they made that determination. So today in this sermon, all of us are to be reminded of the importance of the choices in our lives, especially the young and the youth, and how we need to consider carefully before life passes by. So today I'd like to elucidate on the pathway to life from the book of Proverbs primarily, where God speaks to us, and as recorded by Solomon, the wisest man who has ever lived, seven major facts, seven major interstates of life, if that's what I call them. These are the interstates. You know, the big roadways, the major pathways that have been laid down for us. So it says back in the book of Proverbs, chapter 1, just right off the bat, he says in Proverbs, the first chapter, verses 2 to 5, the very purpose for why the Proverbs were written. And he says, "To know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, judgment, and equity, and give subtlety to the simple, to the young man knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and will increase learning, and a man of understanding shall attain unto wise counsels." And it is for understanding a proverb and the interpretation of the words of the wise and their dark sayings. So here we find that the importance of the qualities of knowledge, understanding, and wisdom. Have we ever asked ourselves, what's the difference? What's the difference between knowledge and understanding and wisdom? And there are major differences. I'm not going to go through all of them, but sometimes it's very important that we just stop for a moment. Knowledge is simply from the word to know something, you know, to have a certain amount of information, to be able to have a wide variety of facts and information. But knowledge of itself, it really doesn't really give us that much to go on. People can know a lot, but it doesn't really help. So Solomon was saying, you have to add to that base of understanding facts and information, understanding. The Hebrew word for understanding means to be able to, with accuracy and with comprehension, delve into a subject to see the bolts and the nuts of that information. to be able to understand how something works. I'm sure all of us at times have recognized that we can have a lot of knowledge about something, but when it comes to explaining how that thing works or how something operates in our life, how many of us find ourselves, you know? Knowledge doesn't do it, does it? To be able to explain and have an understanding is more important. It's very much separate from just having knowledge. The way I was told was that you have to have knowledge and understanding, and wisdom is the ability to know the difference. Okay. Wisdom is the ability to know the difference between knowledge and understanding. And we all have found ourselves sometimes in a position where we are speaking from a knowledge level rather than from an understanding level, right? God says that we ought to speak from understanding, not just from a knowledge perspective, right? I've found myself at times, if you want to, even in physical things, that you can have a certain amount of knowledge, but to be able to understand it. For example, electricity. I have a basic knowledge about electricity. Do I understand it? No. I don't. And because I don't understand it, I'm scared of it. Okay, I don't like it. Yeah, it's frightening to know that something going through that little wire that can put an end to your life very quickly if you don't know what you're doing, right? But it's all based on a very simple system, but do we understand how it works? Or we might say the universe. We have a certain amount of knowledge about the universe, but do we really have any understanding? I've been doing a lot of research recently on, like, the calendar and the calculations of calendar and the Hebrew calendar and so on and so forth. And I could say I have a pretty good knowledge, but I'm not sure I have a good understanding yet of how it all works. I know God established a calendar in the heavens. The calendar comes from God. He made it right from the time of creation. Man was able to deduce from creation that there is a sequence of times and things that go on that we can establish a calendar based upon everything coming about in a proper sequence of time. That's the way it is. Whether you want to call it a solar calendar or a lunar calendar, it's all based upon heavenly bodies. The heavenly bodies. So there's a lot we can understand. I hope I have the wisdom to know what I understand and what is just plain knowledge. Okay. And I probably am in a position where I have a lot more knowledge and I really have understanding about how it all works. But it gets pretty complicated. Very complicated. About how God, because God is not a simple God, is he? He's pretty fantastic. Okay, so we need to have that wisdom that comes from God to be able to discern how much we know and how much we understand. And don't assume that your understanding is high. Sometimes our understanding is limited. And what we need to do then is to learn more and comprehend more. So I want to go through the seven interstates of life today quickly as we go through this subject. The first major interstate is number one thing that God says we need to do is seek wisdom and knowledge. Just the fact we need to seek wisdom and knowledge. Don't ever fail to use the mind that God has given to us to read widely, seek understanding and seek knowledge, and to allow ourselves to have a good basis for what he says. Going back to the book of Proverbs again, chapter 3 and verse 14. He says, "For the merchandise of it is better than the merchandise of silver, and the gain thereof than fine gold." He's talking about wisdom all the way through here. "She is more precious than rubies, and all the things that can desire, you can desire are not to be even compared to her." I mean, you can load up on gold ingots all you want to, like this guy that, what was his name, Tommy Thompson, just recently, that raised that sunken treasure vessel. And he had been given all this money from various investors that he used to go out and find this ship that was supposed to be laden with gold on its way, and it sank. And they knew somewhere close to where it was. Well, recently he found it, a few years ago. And it had something like $52 million worth of gold bars on the ship. The only problem was this guy took it all and then absconded and left and went into hiding. And all of his investors were back here having invested millions of dollars into finding this, and he was gone. He took all of it with him and was living high on the life of Riley, on somebody else's. You know, he was supposed to divide it out and use it, but he kept it for himself. But we are to treasure wisdom and understanding far more than gold. He didn't treasure understanding more than he desired that in gold. And so these precious truths of God are not found lying on top of the ground somewhere at all. Going back to Proverbs chapter 2 for a moment, Proverbs 2 verse 4, where he says, "If you seek her as silver and search for her as for hid treasures, then you shall understand the fear of the Lord and find the knowledge of God. For the Lord gives wisdom; out of his mouth comes knowledge and understanding." You know, how do these people who find gold and silver, how do they find it? Do they just kind of walk along and see it all scattered on top of the ground? Or do they have to work for it? Do they have to search for it? Do they have to dig for it? Do they have to make a determination in their lives to seek what's in there, what's under the ground? I've always been amazed that where God hides precious metals, and they're in the most difficult places to be able to find it. And yet I'm also amazed when you finally do find where these gold or silver veins are. Guess what? Somebody has been there before. Almost in every case you will find that old prospectors have found where those veins and where those lodes are and have gotten the surface amount of it and taken care of it. But it comes, silver and gold comes with a lot of work and a lot of effort, and you have to do a lot of digging. It does not come with a lack of effort. These precious metals are not found just lying on top of the ground. So we need to be able to seek wisdom, knowledge, and understanding as one would go out. Look at the 49ers when they went out west to seek gold. They gave up their old way of life totally, didn't they? They sold everything they had. Were they smart? Probably not. But they sold everything and made a commitment that they were going to go to San Francisco area and they were going to get their riches in gold. Most of them didn't. Most of them died in poverty. Whereas for us, if we seek gold or the wisdom, we won't be disappointed. But another thing along this line is that you have to know what you're looking for. You have to know what you're looking for, because it's not generally just going to be in its form that you're going to recognize. A good example is the Comstock Lode. Any of you ever read the story of the Comstock Lode in Nevada, out in the West? Well, these people were looking for gold. And this other stuff kept getting in their way. And they kept throwing it aside. Because it was obnoxious and it was causing them a whole lot of extra work. And they weren't finding real gold, but all this other stuff that was there was getting in the way, and they just have to keep hauling it off and putting it in the dump or the dump pile out in front. So after a long, long time, somebody finally decided, well, let's see what all that other stuff is. And when they assayed it, they came to a knowledge that it was silver. So here they had been looking for a small amount of gold, and they were throwing all of the silver choice things aside as rubbish. And so when they finally found it and true what it really was, you know that Comstock Lode was the richest silver mine that there's ever been. The richest amount of silver that people have found in one certain area. In fact, just for your information, you know the story on the Titanic of this woman, Molly Brown, right? This person who was rich, but really was rich on what they call new riches, new wealth. She didn't belong to the old established wealth. Well, Molly Brown got her riches from the Comstock Lode, from her silver mines. That's where she got rich. A little tidbit of information. All right. So they were throwing away the real riches. Well, sometimes that's what we can do in knowledge and understanding and wisdom, is that we can throw aside what's really our riches because we're looking for the wrong thing. Over in Proverbs 4 and verse 5, it says, get wisdom and get understanding. Forget it not, and neither decline from the words of your mouth. Forsake her not, and she shall preserve you. Love her, and she shall keep you. That we have to recognize wisdom as the first major highway. Over in chapter 9 of the book of Proverbs, it says that wisdom has builded her house. So wisdom, it says, has a house, and this house has seven pillars that uphold it and are the foundations of this wisdom, or this house of wisdom. Wisdom has builded her house, and she has hewn out her seven pillars. Now we need to, coming on down to verse 4, it says, who is so as simple, let him turn in hither. As for him that wants understanding, she says to him, come, eat of my bread, and drink of the wine which I have mingled. Forsake the foolish and live and go in the way of understanding. That we need to look at what are the pillars. According to the Jewish tradition, these pillars are the same as the ones you will read about in Isaiah chapter 11 and verse 2, where they are describing the characteristics and the quality of the one who became the Messiah. Over in Isaiah 11, where it says in verse 2, and the Spirit of the Lord shall rest upon him, the Spirit of wisdom, the Spirit of understanding, the Spirit of counsel, the Spirit of might, the spirit of knowledge and the spirit of the fear of the Lord. That these are the, according to Jewish tradition, are the pillars upon which the house of wisdom are all built. That we ought to recognize, like Christ did, that he had these differing elements of wisdom. So how do we get this kind of wisdom? James 1 and verse 5, it says, ask God for it. Ask God. Now it says also that the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, right? For all of us, I don't care what our age, for you young people, one of the first things we need to do is know whether or not there is a God. And seek his input and seek his help. Ask and you shall receive. So it says in James 1 and verse 5 that we have to ask God for wisdom. It is a gift from God. And then on over in chapter 3 of the book of James, chapter 3 of the book of James in verse 17 it says, what kind of characteristics and qualities does this wisdom have? 3 and verse 17, it said, but the wisdom that is from above, from God, that is first pure, and then it's peaceable, and is gentle, and it is easy to be entreated, and it is full of mercy, and of good fruits without partiality, and without hypocrisy. That's a mouthful, isn't it? A lot of characteristics about this wisdom that is from God. Just backing up in verse 15, though, he contrasts it with the wisdom of the world. He says, the wisdom descends not from above. This wisdom does not come from above, but is earthly, sensual, and devilish. And what did he call it? Verse 14, bitter, envying, strife in your hearts, glory not and lie not against the truth. Because the way of the world is strife and envy, not truth. The second major highway of wisdom and understanding is avoid the back roads of life. Avoid the back roads, the off-beaten pathways of life, because that's where you're going to wind up getting yourself into trouble, right? I can't tell you how many times when I have tried to take a shortcut that it has cost me hours of time. And I wind up having to go back and get on the main road and get there in the right way in the first place. The back roads may be scenic, but they're not the way to get what God wants us to have. So we need to avoid the back roads. Back in the book of Proverbs, chapter 2, he's interesting what he says here in Proverbs 2, in verses 12 to 16, where he says, to deliver you from the way of the evil man and from the man that speaks froward things, who leave the paths of uprightness, to walk in the ways of darkness, who rejoice to do evil and delight in the frowardness of the wicked. Those ways are crooked and they froward in their path. That there's these back roads. There's always an allure to go a back road, it seems like. Rather than to stay on the beaten paths and the way of God says gets you to the best results and the way God wants us to do. Over in Proverbs 4, what should we do about the back roads? Chapter 4, and beginning verse 10. It says, hear, O my son, and receive me, or my sayings, and the years of your life shall be many. I have taught you in the way of wisdom. I have led these in right paths. When you go, your steps shall not be straitened, and when you run, you shall not stumble. Take fast hold of instruction, and let her not go. Keep her, for she is your life. In other words, God says, cling to it. Hold on to it. Keep it close to you. And then in verse 14, but enter not into the pathways of the wicked, and go not in the way of evil men. These are off-beaten roads, right? These back roads. And what did he say in verse 15? Avoid it. Pass not by it. Turn from it. Then pass away. Don't even let it tempt you. Stay away from it. Because it will lead you to disaster. We have to avoid taking the pathways that will lead to troubles, disappointment, and we want to make sure we stay on the big roadways that lead to life. This third section, the third thing, third highway, is that we need to hate the things God hates. You know, a lot of times people's character can be shown more by the things they hate than by the things they like. Because hatred tends to show where you really, your feelings and your heart really lie. What do you hate about certain things? Well, God says there are seven things that he hates. God hates. Now, if God hates these seven things, I would suggest that you and I ought to hate these seven things too. What are those seven things over in Proverbs 6? To stay on this big freeway, these are the six or seven deadly things we need to avoid. Verse 16, these six things does the Lord hate. Yes, seven are an abomination to him. You know, the problem is sometimes they may not seem very big to us. And so we might even wonder, well, why is that such a big deal with God? Because God sees where those little things lead to, right? Whereas as human beings, we tend to not see where these little things will mushroom into huge, big things. For example, as we go through these seven things in chapter 6 and verse 16, verse 17, first of all, a proud look. God hates a proud look. Why does he hate a proud look? Because it shows what's inside of that person. That they are putting themselves on a level that is not good. So a proud look. Probably if you ever thought about it, none of us like people who have proud looks, do we? If you see somebody that is strutting around and they got, you know, it's obvious that they think they are somebody important. I don't think human beings like it either. But God says he hates a proud look. He also says he hates a lying tongue. Maybe that's why he's staying away from our society so much, because we have a lot of lying tongues today, don't we? Can you believe what anybody says anymore? I don't much. I don't believe what they say on the news programs or TV or anywhere else. Human beings have accepted the reality that perhaps it's okay to lie at various times in order to achieve a more important good, right? For the good in the long run. We can lie and cheat and all kinds of things. God says he hates a lying tongue. If there's any one thing that probably leads to more difficulties in life than any other, it is our lacking in telling the truth. Our inability to be honest. I want to ask you to raise your hands if you've ever been caught in a lie and found it. It's hard to get out of, you know. But all of us have lied at times, right? And we are deceptive, and we try to pull the wool over eyes and make things the way we want them to be. Do you and I hate, then, a lying tongue? The third one is the people that go after innocent people and shed innocent blood. I mean, we see a lot of that on TV too, don't we? Where people have murdered small children and everything else, shed innocent blood. What does it make you feel like? He says, it's a heart that devises wicked imaginations. You know, it's just a characteristic in certain people and in their thinking that they're doing all kinds of imaginations into the evil and the wicked. Feet that are swift to run to mischief. You ever known people who seem to always be where trouble is? They always seem to be right there, right? How quick are you and I to run to mischief? Then in verse 19, the other two, a false witness that speaks lie. You know, a false witness can actually cost another person their lives at times, right? God hates a false witness. And he also hates, he says, people who sow discord. People who create dissension, that create an atmosphere of lacking in peace. So this major highway is to ask ourselves, how many of these six or seven things that God hates do we hate? And with what intensity of hatred do we have? For example, lie. I don't like lying, or is it a hatred of untruth, of lying and cheating? Hypocrisy, whatever you want to call it. Big road number four is that we ought to be diligent. Be diligent and don't be afraid of hard work. Be diligent and don't be afraid of hard work. It's pretty easy to be a slackard today and get your meal given to you, right? But Proverbs says through Solomon that we ought to be diligent and be industrious. Over in Proverbs 10, in verse 4, he says, he becomes poor that deals with a slack hand, but the hand of the diligent will become rich. Diligent, work, effort. Chapter 13, and verse 4. The soul of the sluggard desires and has nothing, but the soul of the diligent shall be made fat. Especially thus be diligent in seeking truth, and in wisdom, and in knowledge, and understanding. Be diligent in doing it. Don't be satisfied with just a casual understanding of certain things or a knowledge level. In Proverbs chapter 22, in verse 29, it says, in verse 29, see you a man diligent in his business, and he will be standing before kings, and he shall not stand before mere men. God does reward those who are diligent in what they do, how they work. You can also read Proverbs 26 and verse 13 to 16 about not being slothful. Over in Proverbs chapter 26, where we ought to know the state of our flocks, he says in verse 26, or chapter 26, verse 13. The slothful man sits there, is a lion in the way. There is a lion in the streets. So as the door turns upon his hinges, so does the slothful upon his bed. That he doesn't understand where and what is going on and what is happening. In Proverbs 27, he says in 23, Be you diligent to know the state of your flocks and to look well to your herds. Do you know what the state of your mind, the state of your understanding, the state of what you are, what do you really believe and what do you not really believe? To try to make an inventory of the things you know and know that you know, and the things that you may just have a knowledge level of, but you don't really understand or know for sure. The fifth point, the fifth one of these major freeways, is to be a considerate and caring individual. Have a love for human beings. First of all, have a love for God, a love for human beings, and also a love for animals. My wife has often said in talking with people who are going to get married, she says, just for your information, before you get married, make sure you know how he treats his pets and his animals. Because it's really going to tell you a lot about that individual. If they treat their animals with distaste and they can kick them out and they can take all kinds of revenge on them, sooner or later, that's the way they are going to treat other human beings too. How do they treat animals is a telltale sign. But God says that we ought to be considerate and loving human beings. That we ought to provide for others. In Proverbs 27, where we were a minute ago, in 27 verse 23, where he said that we ought to recognize the state of our flock. Are they well fed? Are they taken care of? We also find in the book of Ecclesiastes, chapter 11 and verse 1, that we ought to spread our bread on the waters. You know, feed other people. And in the long term, it will come back. Are we selfish or are we willing to give to others who have need? In Proverbs 3 and verse 27, also says similar things. In 3 and verse 27, withhold not good from them to whom it is due, when it is in the power of your hand to do it. Don't withhold good. Okay, number six is be a person of self-control. Self-control. Proverbs 15 verse 1 says, a soft answer turns away wrath, right? Verse 1, a soft answer turns away wrath, but grievous words stir up anger. And I'm sure all of us have found that to be true, haven't we? But you know, there's something about human people that like to just poke a little bit, like with pricks, you know. If you know somebody is upset, needle them a little bit more. And we all tend to be able to have that characteristic. God says we ought to have a characteristic of a soft answer turns away wrath. It's not easy. For some of us who grew up in a certain way or a certain household, it's not easy. It's not easy. Anger has never been an easy solution with the Cole family. It runs in the family. Easy to get upset. Easy to get angry. In some ways, my dad was an angry man all his life. And what did he do? An angry man tends to take it out on those who are closest, doesn't he? Those who are closest. The only problem is that it gets kind of passed from one generation to the next generation. And in some way, God has to be the one to intervene and solve that problem. Now, I think you can talk to my wife and she will tell you that I've made good progress, right? A little bit. A little bit. Some people do not necessarily have an anger problem, but they also may have a problem of being able to feel strongly about what's right and wrong, right? And sometimes that can be just as big of a problem to where they are what I would call pacifists, right? Without strong emotional feelings about things. God doesn't want us that way either, but to know where the proper balance is from one to the other one. That we ought to be able to, as it says, be angry and sin not. But we have self-control. In Proverbs 29 and verse 22, it says again that we ought to be 29 and verse 22. An angry man stirs up strife, and a furious man abounds in transgressions. And that is a very true fact. That's the way it is. Finally, number 7, and you're probably saying, finally! Okay. Number 7 is, seek a multitude of counsel. And not just from one person, by the way. As it says in Proverbs chapter 11, going back, and especially for you young people, seek a wide variety of input from people. From wise people, by the way. Learn from differing approaches and differing ways. Don't just listen to one, but seek the help of people who are well established, who know a lot of things. That we can go from there. 11 and verse 14. Where no counsel is, people fall. But in the multitude of counselors, by the way, it says counselors. That's plural. So it's not just the amount of counsel. It's you ought to get counsel from a number of counselors. A number of differing people. In the multitude of counselors, there's safety. In chapter 27 and verse 17, it says, in chapter 27 and verse 17, iron sharpens iron. So a man sharpens the countenance of his friend. Iron sharpens iron. This counsel, this give and take, this relationship with people who are wise and helpful. Be able to go and get that input. Now you have to be careful with that concept of iron sharpening iron, because iron can also dull iron, right? Depending on how you use it. You take a piece of iron and you could sharpen a knife really sharp if you use it correctly. But if you take that knife and just beat it against that piece of iron, guess what's going to happen? Doesn't work. So it's a matter of being able to use it to refine, to file down to a sharp, keen edge our understanding and our knowledge. Don't be a Rehoboam. Remember the story of Rehoboam, the son of Solomon? After Solomon's death, Rehoboam became the king over Israel, or Judah actually, and he sought the advice of the old wise people. He didn't like that advice, so then he went to his peers, right, the young, like he was very young actually when he became king over Israel, over Judah. So he went to the people that he grew up with and said, well, you know, you tell me what I ought to do. And they said, the whole issue had to be how strict he was going to be over these people and what he was going to do. How much was he going to tax them? How much was he going to ask for it? And they said, stick it to them. You got the power now. I mean, Solomon only required this much. you may get this much. And he uses the analogy of a finger and a thigh. If Solomon and his relationship was like a finger, if you make that relationship like a thigh, you know, make it heavy. Well, guess what happened? He lost 10/12 of the house, right, of his subjects, and they went a different direction. And so now he winds up just being the ruler over the tribes of Judah. So those are the seven, now there are many more, I just chose those seven highways. They're major thoroughfares to the wise and the wisdom and the understanding that God wants us to have to make the choices, the decisions in our lives, to choose a life, and it will reward us with everything that we need.